That was the fourth movement of the Dvorak Ninth Symphony, called From the New World, by Antonín Dvorak. That was performed by the Vienna Philharmonic Orchestra under the direction of Kirill Kondrashin. That was for Tom Geider, who called in a request. And if you ever feel like listening to something, you can always call when the show is on. And we'll do the best we can to find what you'd like and put it on for you. You're listening to WSB Stony Brook 90.1, and this has been your host David Brown, and see you again in 3 weeks, when it'll be the day before Easter, and I will devote the whole 3 hours to a CD recording I've just gotten of the St. Matthew Passion of Johann Sebastian Bach. Thank you for listening.
Stardate March 12th. On a grand scale, our universe is made up of galaxies, huge collections of billions of stars. But although each one is fabulously huge and bright with the light of so many shining stars, the galaxies that astronomers see through their telescopes extend only about as far as a billion light years. After that, even the gigantic galaxies become too faint to see. But there are objects in our universe believed to be seen at much greater distances than a billion light years. Quasars, first discovered in the early 1960s, appear as far away as 10 billion light years or more. To be so far away and still visible, the quasars must be almost inconceivably brilliant. No one knows for certain how they would generate the energy that makes them shine, but it's believed that quasars stem from highly energetic processes taking place in the cores of galaxies. Every year, more quasars are found. There are a few thousand known right now. And recently, quasars have been discovered at greater and greater distances. This past fall, the farthest one yet was found. The quasar Q0051-279 was discovered using a machine, a laser scanning device that reads photographic plates of the night sky to determine whether each object on the plate is a star or a galaxy. Later, the scan's result is run through a computer to pinpoint which objects are quasars. In this way, the most distant quasar yet was found, thought by some astronomers to lie at a distance of about 12 billion light years. For March 12th, that's star date. For the McDonald Observatory, I'm Joel Block.
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
Number is 2. Please make a note of it.
Please repeat.
The number you have reached has been changed. The new number has been disconnected.
Ring damage.
Möchten Sie etwas zu trinken haben?
Thank you. say? 9.
Just hold on a second.
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
Can you say deja vu?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
Can you say deja vu?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
Can you say deja vu?
Good evening, Vice President Nixon.
Good evening, Mr. Howe.
Welches sind die Regenbogenfarben?
If you do not push a key in 3 seconds, you will be disconnected.
Mein Bruder ist jünger als ich.
Minutes after 10 o'clock. On this, the 12th day of March, the glorious year of 1988. And how about a sonic boom for the road? Thank you so much. Well, let's take a look at what's going on in the news as we begin this edition of Brain Damage, and it's going to be an interesting one, I can tell you that much. In the news tonight, school children stranded in a Nebraska farmhouse for the past 2 nights got a break early today. The electricity came back on. The students and another school bus load at another farmhouse are among the many people stranded since a blizzard hit Thursday afternoon. And Vice President George Bush says debates are cruel and unusual punishment. And it's the truth. So after going through 7, he's saying no thanks to Senator Bob Dole's challenge to debate him tonight on a Chicago TV station. By his own admission, Tuesday's Illinois primary is crucial to Dole's crippled presidential campaign. It's Democratic caucus day in South Carolina, Jesse Jackson's childhood home state. He's hoping for a big win heading into Tuesday's Illinois contest. And Soviet public relations expert Valentin Kazinchin has been studying American commercials and admits he's a little confused. Why, he asks, is Kmart America's favorite store? And another thing, if the night belongs to Michelob, what beer should you drink at other times? There's no word yet on deaths and injuries in the latest attack by Israeli jets on Palestinian guerrilla bases in Lebanon. Lebanese police and Israeli army officials say warplanes blasted bases in four villages outside Sidon. It's Israel's second air raid inside Lebanon this year and follows an attack on an Israeli civilian bus blamed on the Palestine Liberation Organization. Israeli soldiers clashed with protesters in the occupied territories today. One man was shot and wounded after he threw a hand grenade that failed to explode. Meanwhile, Bethlehem's mayor says about 300 Palestinian police officers have resigned, including all 50 officers in his city, and he asks who now will protect citizens from criminals. The Reagan administration said yesterday that the Palestine Liberation Organization must shut its observer mission to the United Nations within 10 days, or the United States would take action in federal court to close it. Secretary of State George Shultz is calling Congress's decision to close the United Nations office, in his words, one of the dumber things that Congress has done lately. Attorney General Edwin Meese is giving the PLO until March 21st to close its New York office, or he'll ask a federal court to enforce the Anti-Terrorism Act of 1987. Shultz says the unintended effect of the decision has been to give legitimacy to the PLO. In a letter delivered yesterday to Zerdi Labid Terzai, the PLO's chief observer at the United Nations, Mr. Meese said the law prohibited the Palestinian organization from establishing or maintaining an office within the jurisdiction of the United States. Mr. Terzi's administrative assistant said, "We are not closing down. This dispute has to go to arbitration." The aide who refused to give her name said the action today by the United States was a violation of an international agreement that the United States is obliged to uphold. We have with us on the telephone Mr. Terzai, the PLO's chief observer at the United Nations. Mr. Terzai, can you hear us?
Yes, very well, but the name is Terzi, not Terzai.
Terzi. My apologies.
That's all right.
I assume you've heard the news report I just read, obviously.
Yes.
And are there any inaccuracies in your view as to what we've just said?
No, the way you read the report is correct and factual. And the fact remains that we have no intention of closing our mission for the simple reason we are not accredited to the United States. We are accredited to the United Nations. And the United Nations unanimously, with the exception of Israel, support the position and the status of the PLO observer mission to the UN, namely that we are permitted to enter, remain, and have our functional facilities and premises where we can sleep and where we can work. And this is an agreement that was entered into in 1947 between the United States and the United Nations.
Now, for the benefit of our listeners that may not understand why the Palestine Liberation Organization has an office in New York, could you explain what your duties are and what activities you go through throughout the course of a week, say, and just what is the PLO, I guess in your words, what is the PLO?
Well, the PLO is the Palestine Liberation Organization, which is the name that is given to the embodiment of the totality of the Palestinian people. And in 1974, the United Nations realized that the Palestinian people were not represented at the United Nations, and that for almost 30 years they were denied that right to be party to any deliberations, any discussions, and extended, the General Assembly of the UN extended an invitation to the representative of the Palestinian people, that is the Palestine Liberation Organization, to come to the United Nations and participate like any other nation or state. And since 1974, we had set up our representative office here, and we have been contributing towards the efforts of the UN in order to bring a peaceful solution to the conflict in the Middle East. And what we do is exactly what any other representative body does here. We try to explain the hopes, the aspirations, the rights of our people and also to participate in formulating a political and peaceful solution to the conflict. And this is what we have been doing since 1974. But lately, all of a sudden, somebody in the United States thinks that we should not be here, thereby denying the Palestinian people the right to participate in the peace process and the decision and the decision process to bring peace to the area.
Now, just to clarify, the year that the PLO mission opened in New York City was which?
1974.
Now, you say that you're in New York to bring about a peaceful solution to the whole mess in the Middle East. A lot of people would say that the PLO is simply a terrorist organization that bombs buses and kills innocent civilians. Now, how do you respond to that?
Well, you see, the fact that 147 states, member states, including the friends and the allies of the United States, in December, said that the Palestine Liberation Organization has the right to be here in representation of their people. And the only negative vote then was the vote of Israel. It goes to show beyond any doubt that I would say the entire international community thinks otherwise, that we are not a batch of terrorists and that we do have the right to be here.
But hasn't the PLO claimed responsibility for certain terrorist acts?
I would say very distinctly the Palestine Liberation Organization has not, has never, and will never committed terrorist acts. On the contrary, the Palestine Liberation Organization has undertaken, like any other state or government, to combat terrorism and to denounce it and combat it.
Can you give me an example of how you combat terrorism?
Yes, very well. We combat terrorism by trying to bring peace to the area and have the 5 million Palestinians enjoy their rights and not be subjected to the terrorism of an occupying power, namely the Israeli army. We are combating state terrorism against our people.
All right, how is it that you're combating this? That's what I'm trying to find out.
Well, we're combating it by coming to the... One way is to come to the United Nations here, which is a forum to bring peace instead of war, and contribute and present our method and way that has been accepted by almost the entire international community to bring peace to the area. And the other way, as I told you, the PLO is the embodiment of the Palestinian people. The form of concrete combating terrorism are those boys and girls and women and men that you see resisting the presence of the Israeli occupation by whatever means they have, and those sacred stones of the Holy Land have proved to be one of the strongest arms and weapons and instruments against the Israeli state terrorism.
So you consider Israeli occupying forces to be of a terrorist nature, I assume?
Oh, that's exactly state terrorism, yes.
I see. Now, the PLO seems to be kind of factionalized. There's different groups, one part headed by Arafat. Who do you consider to be the leader of the PLO?
Well, there is only one representative of the Palestinian people and the PLO, and that is the National Council, which is our Congress, as you would say, and it has elected an executive committee, and at the head of that executive committee is Yasser Arafat. So the Palestinian people maintain that the PLO is their representative, and the leadership was elected by their legislative assembly, as you would say.
Uh-huh. But you don't deny that that there are factions within the PLO.
Oh, of course I don't deny it. On the contrary, I think this is one of the healthiest signs that we have, is that we do have different and dissident opinions and different opinions, there is something called the dynamism of life. And when I watch your TV and I see how the members of the one and same party, how they are confronting one another with different opinions and different ideas, and also plotting against one another in one way or another, then you do realize that dissension and different opinions exist in a healthy democratic society. But let me add here, Mr. Schulz was visiting Israel a few days ago. He could not get the prime minister and the foreign minister to talk to him jointly. He had to shuttle between their rooms or their offices. So that is also something very, very bad, and the dissension in Israel seems to be more deeply rooted, because whenever the Secretary General sends an envoy of the UN or any other government, send their representatives to meet with the leadership of the PLO, the chairman and the members of the executive committee are all there to meet at the same time in the same place.
Now, you say that the democratic way of life is healthy. Is that correct?
That's right.
Now, Israel is considered a democracy. Do you think it's healthy that there are certain aspects of dissent going on now regarding what's going on the West Bank?
Well, to start with, I cannot really agree with you that Israel is a democratic country. I mean, no democratic country would invade and occupy the territory of others and place it under military restrictions for more than 22 years. That's anti-democratic. But within the Israeli society itself, there are dissenting groups, and we think that is a healthy sign as well. But what I was referring to, the divergence and dissension, was within the government itself, not on the street. We really are happy to see that in Israel there is democracy, but the government is not a democratic government. We take this into consideration, that one of the strongest elements against Israeli occupation and military practices is the democratic society that resents it. And we hope that those democratic groups and peace promoters in Israel will definitely hope that they will definitely become a real force to combat those who are at the head of the government and bring peace to the area.
I'd like to address for just a moment the bombing last Monday on the bus in Dimona, the nuclear power plant. Now, I'd like to know, the newspapers are saying that the PLO claimed responsibility for this. Is this true or is it not?
Now, first you have to tell me, what sort of a bus was it? Was it a civilian bus or a bus, or was it a military target? That bus was in a military zone which is restricted. Even Israelis are not permitted in. It carried experts from a center for nuclear development and nuclear research, which is one of the more dangerous aspects of militarism. So what was attacked was a military target and not a civilian target. Now, one thing that you have to realize is that we are in a state of war. And unless and until Israel agrees to come to the negotiating table, the state of war will continue and will escalate.
So in effect, what you're saying is that in a state of war, almost anything is justified.
Almost anything against military targets, yes.
So you consider this bus to be a military target? I mean,
I told you it was a bus in a military zone, and it was carrying experts in the development of nuclear weaponry. So how much more military would it be?
Let's address the issue of what's happening on the West Bank and the Gaza Strip. In your view, what is it that made this start? I guess it was late December. Why has this begun? Why is there so much violence now?
Well, I'll tell you what. I mean, if you were to live for one generation under the boots of the army of occupation, if you were denied your civil and political rights, if you were denied even the status of being a citizen of a country, if you were not permitted even to elect your municipal councilman, if you were not permitted to have your own school curriculum, if you were not permitted to travel freely in your own country, after one generation, you would find out that the new generation rejects that situation. And they would explode and go in rebellion. And this is exactly what happened. This is an uprising against the permanence and the perpetuation of occupation. And this was inevitable. This is one of the historical inevitabilities that the people under foreign occupation would rise against the occupying power.
Does your organization have any control over this situation?
After all, I mean, we are all one people, and there is always, I wouldn't say control, but there is always a relationship, and I would say an organic relationship, with our own people who are under occupation and our people who are in dispersion.
Well, if you,
just one people.
If you were to make an appeal, or if Yasser Arafat was to make an appeal and say, stop throwing stones at Israeli soldiers and we will negotiate some kind of a settlement, would the young people in the West Bank and Gaza Strip listen?
I'll tell you what, I mean, you have put a big if there. If Israel would come out to the world and say that they are willing to accept the position adopted by the international community, that their occupation of those territories is illegal, and that they will abide by the principles, etc., and that they will withdraw, and that they will sit at the negotiating table to consider the mechanism of withdrawal, I'm sure when we make an appeal to our people, I'm sure they will respond. But we will never tell our people, lay down your stones while the Israeli army of occupation sits on your throat and on your necks.
So, in effect, you're saying Israel has to make the first move.
Well, I mean, Israel is the occupying power. It is not the boys and women who are throwing the stones. So the occupying power has to respond to the international claim. There is one thing that people in the United States sometimes are not aware of, that for more than 21 years, the international community, including the United States, have been calling upon Israel as the occupying power to end that situation of foreign occupation, and Israel does not respond. Even Israel itself, in those areas, does not consider itself to be the sovereign power. It is the occupying power. Mr. Peres was on TV a few weeks ago, and he said these occupied territories. Now, to end this state of revolt and rebellion, there must be a prerequisite, which is to end occupation. Because historically, foreign occupation engenders resistance. And the form of resisting takes different shapes. It could be a peaceful resistance, where people just go on strikes and don't pay taxes. Sometimes it goes a little beyond that, and we have seen it now for the last 3 months. They even throw stones.
Do you draw any parallels between other parts of the world, past or present, with the Palestinian uprising?
Now, let me take during the last war, the main world war, there were in France, in Europe, in Poland, there were the resistance groups who have taken action. But I think one of the most glorious uprisings was the uprising at the ghetto Warsaw. The Warsaw Ghetto, where the people in the ghetto did confront the Nazis with whatever weapons they had. But that, in my opinion, is one of the most glorious uprisings against foreign occupation, and in that particular case, against a Nazi occupation. On the other hand, we see something which is still alive, all the way down at the southern core of Africa, in South Africa and in Namibia. We see the same thing happening. We see the people throwing stones. Now, there are two different issues there. In South Africa, the people are in uprising because they want their rights as human beings. they say one person, one vote. In Namibia, the uprising is to end the illegal presence of the South African government in that territory so that the Namibians become independent and a free nation. So the similarity in this historic development is very, very striking.
I see. Is there any particular reason as to the timing of your
yes, hello?
I was just asking if you thought there was any particular reason why this is happening to the PLO office in New York now.
Oh, yes, I'll tell you. I mean, simply because the Palestine Liberation Organization has spoken on behalf of its people. The cause of the Palestinian people is now better understood. It gets more support, more understanding. But the United States government and Israel want to impose some sort of a settlement that is based on the exclusion of the Palestinian people and the exclusion of their rights. So what would happen is that the PLO has to be removed from the formula for peace.
And you think that just is unacceptable completely?
I mean, that will not lead us to peace, and it is unacceptable. It is very damaging to the efforts for peace, and this is why those who are opposed to the peace process want to eliminate the Palestinian presence from the American scene, not only from the UN, because that law that you're talking about makes it unlawful for anybody in the United States to further the interests of the PLO, and the interests of the PLO are the rights of the Palestinian people. So if anyone in the United States, as of the 21st of March, would be supporting the rights of the Palestinian people for self-determination, then the United States government might say this is an unlawful act and take some action against him.
Now, we should make clear at this point, though, that this is not this is the legislative branch of the government.
I beg your pardon?
This is the legislative branch of the government speaking. The executive branch seems to be saying something completely different.
I thought this country here, I cannot claim to know much about your country. But in a country where the legislative branch makes a law, then the executive will have to implement it, unless that executive branch immediately at the executive power and the executive level would say that this law is either unconstitutional or damaging to the nation or something like that. Whatever Mr. Schulz says may carry some moral weight, but it does not carry any legal weight. And the law is still the law. And it's entirely up to the government and the structure. You see, you have a constitutional structure in the country. The entire structure has to agree that this law is causing problems first to the Americans because it will be denying them their rights to know. Because, I mean, should the PLO be not permitted to function to speak on behalf of the Palestinians, you may not be able to call me after the 21st because I am that the right to know, the right to hear me would be denied to you, and this would be unlawful. So this is one aspect. The other aspect is that closing the mission accredited to the United Nations is a very blatant violation of an obligation that arises from the international treaty that the United States has within United Nations. And that 143 states the other day, that is the totality of the members of the UN who were there, voted that the matter should go before the International Court of Justice. So here was an indictment that the U.S. was committing something wrong that has to be decided by the International Court of Justice. This is really very embarrassing that the United States stands accused, and the accusation is coming from the rest of the world. All of them, friends and foes, even the allies of the United States, stood on the other side, the side supporting the PLO, and not accepting the position of the United States.
It seems that the United States really doesn't know which way to go on this, because we do...
Well, I hate to comment there, because I still believe that the United States does know where it goes, because it would be very naive of me if I thought that those senators and congressmen did not know. You see, one person in particular, the chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee in the Senate, Claiborne Pell, did object to the law because he said, listen, I mean, this is a violation of our obligations, and this is going to put us in problems. And State Department, there were some very nice people there, in the fact that they knew exactly what was happening. So they did, on record, advise both the House and the Senate that the mission to the UN should not be touched, because that will create problems. And as Mr. Schultz said last night, I don't like to repeat his words, but this is exactly what's happening now.
What I meant was we are sending different signals at different times. For instance, the vote in the UN about 2 months ago, where the United States abstained from a vote, I believe it was condemning Israel's actions, seen as a very strong statement against the policy of Israel in the West Bank and the Gaza Strip. But then closing the PLO office seems a total reversal of that policy.
I would say if the United States were really sincere in its position, it would have also asked that Israel should not be permitted to have its offices at the United Nations as well, because after all, what the U.S. Have voted for was condemning Israel of committing those acts, which are, I mean, how they are state terror acts of state terrorism. And so here you see that the United States is dealing with the issue with a double standard.
Now, if you could clear something else up for us, there was a PLO office in Washington, D.C., I believe.
Well, that was a Palestine Information Office, which was an office of an American citizen, and he was acting legally and registered at...
...helps to produce added tax revenue for the Treasury.
...that the executive branch has ordered its closure, and he closed. But so far, the Department of Justice has not to ask him to close because he has done nothing wrong. There is something which is very peculiar in that case. The State Department and the executive branch ordered the closure, and the Department of Justice was simply watching that. So we're rather perplexed, and that's why I tell you we don't... I, as a Palestinian, I don't know anything about your legal system, where the Department of Justice permits someone to work legally in the country, and yet another branch of the administration orders the closure of that office.
It's the kind of thing that happens when you have different branches of government sometimes conflicting over controversial issues.
Well, that's not very reassuring then, you know.
Yeah, well, sometimes things take quite a long time to get
well,
resolved.
Well, I pity you people there.
Well, I wanted to ask you one more thing about what's happening on the West Bank, though.
Sure.
There is a current, I would guess, push to ban TV reporting from the scenes of conflict. Now, I was wondering what kind of comment you might have on that.
Well, I don't think I really should comment. I mean, that an occupying power should now reach a stage where they want to cover up on their crimes. And barring the media from entering those areas and banning them and taking such drastic action, sometimes even confiscating the TV film reels, etc., I'm really concerned because the Israelis may be planning for something still much more violent and much more brutal.
Well, do you think...
As was attributed, and I don't know to what extent this was right or not, that Mr. Kissinger asked them to deal with the situation with more brutality and with more speed.
In fact, I have that exact quote here. It's from a memo that Henry Kissinger and I believe Julius Berman, former chairman of the Conference of Presidents of Major American Jewish Organizations, an internal memo, Kissinger said, Israel should bar the media from entry into the territories involved in the present demonstrations, accept the short-term criticism of the world press for such conduct, and put down the insurrection as quickly as possible, overwhelmingly, brutally, and rapidly.
Well, I mean, if this, I mean, you know what this image, what sort of an image is portrayed to our people when such a dignitary of the United States, a man who was running the policies of the United States for quite a considerable period, comes out with such ideas. Now, what impression does this give to the man on the street who is beaten and have his arms broken? And he would think that this is the United States. And I'm sure that this is causing much more damage to the U.S. because as far as the Israelis are concerned, their image is damaged beyond repair. But Mr. Kissinger now is contributing to damaging the image of the United States among those victims.
There's lots of confusion as far as both the United States role and the Israeli role. I think probably the biggest bewilderment among people is the question, how can Israelis be doing this after having survived the Holocaust? How can they be put into a position of occupying another land, of being accused of brutalities, of being shown to have committed atrocities? How is this possible?
Well, as a matter of fact, my Jewish friends here in New York and my Israeli Jewish friends are very embarrassed, and frankly, they simply cannot accept it, and I can understand. I mean, as human beings, there are some moral values that they see violated every day in a very brutal way, and they simply cannot take it. But on the other hand, I would think that these people have to come out in the clear and just tell Israel. I mean, I read an ad the other day in the Christian Science Monitor, and was signed by, I would say, exclusively Jewish Americans, and some of them were some of the greatest supporters of Israel. And now they are condemning it today much more than anyone else. They simply feel indignant, and they feel sick, I mean, that some government, whatever it is committing those atrocities, and in this case, it's the government that they had supported all the time.
How fragile do you think the Israeli government is? If the Israeli government was to...
That's fragile. I mean, I wouldn't say it is fragile. I would say that it is still can survive. And the coalition they have seems to be the order of the day for them, because neither party can win an overwhelming majority. But in case of immediate elections, I think there will be a process of polarization, which is, at this very moment, I don't think it's very helpful.
Well, what I was going to ask was, if they were to concede and grant, say, Palestinian autonomy, would they not be surrounded by hostile neighbors?
Look, this is a poor excuse. The question is, if they grant some autonomy, I think that would make the situation worse for them, because autonomy as such would mean that the Palestinians have to lose any hope of being independent. So the resentment and the resistance would increase. But the way that the matter should be resolved is that the Palestinians, who have the right to self-determination, they have the right to be independent, they have the right to be free, if they see a glimmer of hope that these rights are respected and that they will be realized, if not within 5 months, then within 1 year, then Israel does not have to fear anything, because you know that Israel is one of the strongest and best militarized garrison states in the world. And in that area, it is the best. So they have nothing to fear.
Do you envision a day when Palestinians and Israelis will be allies?
Well, all I can tell you, I work for the day when we, at least when we are no longer enemies, when we set the tone for understanding, for cooperation, and for contribution towards the development of the area. And this is the day that I really am working for. But I cannot work for that as long as I am not permitted to return home, and I'm even denied the right to be back home where I was born and raised. And that is Jerusalem.
You're not allowed to go back to Jerusalem.
Well, I'm not allowed to be back home in my own town where I was born and raised. And how can I think of constructive measures in the future if at this stage I cannot go home? I mean, it's stupid.
Well, I'd just like to touch on that a little bit more. Now, if you were to try to go back to your home now, what would happen?
Well, to start with, I think the Israelis will not permit me to go. Secondly, if I go home, I should be assured, like anybody else, that when I go home, I'll be treated like a human being with full political rights. And that's what I want. Since the Palestinians are not even assured of their municipal rights, then I would be in dreamland if I think that could be granted.
Now, recently there were a series of expulsions for certain people, and there was a boat that was supposed to sail back to Israel, carrying some of these people that have been thrown out. What is the status of that?
Well, this is another one of those situations where the United States plays with a double face. For example, they fully supported the move in the Security Council that deportation was illegal and that the deportees should be permitted to return. And when the Council met again to take further steps to ensure that the deportees be enabled to return to their homes, the United States used the veto. So we were perplexed. We didn't know what their position was. I mean, if they are opposed to deportation and they think it is illegal, then they should take the next step to make that realistic and take action that would compel Israel to abide and respect by those decisions taken. But between one day and the other, the United States just changed the position and went to the other extreme and used the veto to prevent the Council from taking action. I mean, the Security Council. Yeah.
Regarding the ship, though, forgive me, I forget the name of the ship.
Well, it was supposed to be, I think, Exodus 2.
Exodus 2. What is the current status of that?
I mean, you do know that the Israeli agents placed some dynamite in it and, in an attempt to terrorize and intimidate the people, and I think it's called off for the time being.
Do you know if the PLO plans to sail this ship?
Well, frankly speaking, from this end here, I have no idea what the future plan is.
I see. Just to get a better idea of what you currently do in New York, how large is your observer mission, and how many people currently work with you there?
Well, I mean, we are three political staff and four who do the research and secretarial work. So this is the mission.
Uh-huh.
And if the United States really feels that this mission is such a great threat to their policies, I feel proud. I don't know if you understand me. You know. that they should have legislation to throw us out because we are so effective. We really feel proud about what the TLO is doing here.
If they do succeed in closing the mission, will all of you be deported?
Well, that would be the day. I think, the matter has to go before the judiciary, and we are sure that the people in the judiciary have more sense than the others.
How do you think the American people view your cause? Do you have much contact with the American people?
I would say in the last few months, our contact... you see, we're not permitted to travel beyond 25 miles from the Lincoln Center here in New York.
Whose law is that?
I beg pardon?
Whose law? Is that a United Nations law?
So that's what the United States says, that the United States cannot deny us entry and stay in here to carry out our official functions. But they can really, and I think they are right, this is their right, they can say, listen, you cannot travel anywhere beyond the area where you live and where you work. That puts me within an area of 2 miles or 3 miles radius. But they give me 25 miles, and I don't complain. This is your country. You can do whatever you like.
So you don't have that much contact then with the American people.
But the contact we have are the huge number of university students and faculty who are in touch with us by correspondence, or they show up here at the UN, and we're invited to address those groups. We're invited now more and more often to address church groups. For the last 4 Sundays, I've been being invited to churches everywhere around the vicinity here, and I'm grateful that I'm given that opportunity.
Well, I think we've pretty much covered all of the ground as far as...
Well, I'm glad that you gave me the opportunity to address you and address your listeners.
Is there anything that you would like to say in closing?
Well, all I would say is that for you and for your listeners, if you really think that the voice of the Palestinians should be heard, and if you're really fair in your dealing, you cannot just permit one party to the conflict to speak and be here active and deny the other party from presenting its case. So please ask your representatives, whether in Senate, Congress, or anywhere else, that they should too permit or enable the Palestinians, through their representative, the PLO, to present their case in the United States and in the international community, and I thank you for that.
I was wondering if you have any literature that you might be able to send us.
Well, I'll tell you what, I would appreciate it if you just send us a little note, and I'm sure the office will send you whatever literature we have.
Okay.
The address is 115 East 65th Street, 65 Street, and it's New York 10021. And whatever requests we receive, we'll be more than happy to satisfy within our capabilities. And remember, the law says that you are not permitted to receive anything from the PLO except information, and we'll be more than happy to send you that information.
Well, Mr. Terzi, PLO Chief Observer at the United Nations, I want to thank you for taking the time on this Saturday night.
I thank you for giving me something beneficial and fruitful to do.
And I think I can join with most of our listeners in saying I hope the day comes when there'll be peace in the Middle East, and Jew and Palestinian alike will be able to...
Thank you very much.
Okay. Thanks for talking to us.
Thank you. I wonder, could I get a cassette of this interview?
I'll get in touch with you, and I'll get you a copy of it.
Thank you. Thank
okay.
you.
Thanks very much.
Thank you. Bye now.
Good night. What I was saying was, I'm sure we can all look forward to the day when Jew and Palestinian alike will sit together in peace, and all this craziness can end once and for all. We're going to come back in a few minutes, talk some more about this. We're going to take your phone call, 632-6901. If you want to reserve a space, call now. Phone will ring for quite a while because we're going to play a couple of musical pieces. 632-6901. The program is Brain Damage. The station is WUSB in Stony Brook. And we're talking about the Middle East. And we'll probably be talking about other things as well. So stay right where you are, 90.1 FM. Music from The Clash on WUSB, Stony Brook. It's 11 o'clock, and we'll be taking a look at a couple of other stories in the Mideast and a couple other stories in the world. Taking phone calls, 632-6901, area code 516, in just a couple of moments.
Thank you.
WUSB, Stony Brook. Opening up the doors of free speech. And no doubt they'll be closed in our face once again, but at least we try. 4 minutes after 11 o'clock, and music from the soundtrack of The Harder They Come. And we heard Rivers of Babylon, done by the Melodians, produced by Leslie Kung. And our phone number is 632-6901, area code 516. And the comments that we've gotten off-air are fairly interesting. Among them, surprised that we're able to just go out and speak to people that are obviously so much in the news. To be able to speak to somebody of the Palestine Liberation Organization for almost an hour on live radio is simply something that a lot of people just don't think is possible. Well, it is possible. These people exist. There's people in the news all over the place. And the events of the news that we hear in the newspapers and see on TV, they're not fantasy. They're really happening. It's really happening all around us. New York City may be closer, but the Middle East is still there. It's just a little further away, but it's still there. And the things that go on are really going on. And we can talk to human beings that are experiencing things either over there or over here or involved in some way. So it all makes a difference. It's not irrelevant. It's not something that that we should just not talk about, because it is happening. Just like it's snowing in the Midwest, that's happening. It's nighttime here, you know. It's all relative and all relevant. For those of us just tuning in, not knowing what in the world I'm talking about, we have spent the last hour talking to Zidai Labib Terzi, the Palestine Liberation Organization's chief observer at the United Nations, the office that has been ordered to shut down within 10 days by the Reagan administration. Attorney General Edwin Meese III said the closing of the mission was required by a law passed by Congress over the objections of the administration. Reagan signed the measure on December 22nd, but he expressed reservations about the wisdom of the provision. In fact, George Shultz called the decision one of the dumber things that Congress has done lately. The deadline, March 21st, for the PLO office in New York to close its doors. And Secretary of State Shultz says this, in effect, gives legitimacy to the PLO, among other things. In other news from that region, a CBS News videotape of Israeli soldiers kicking and clubbing two handcuffed Palestinian rioters several weeks ago led to the arrest of the soldiers. However, recently there were indications that the same tape could lead to restrictions on the press. The tape of beatings appeared last Thursday on the CBS Evening News with Dan Rather as part of a report from correspondent Bob Simon. The beatings went on for about 45 minutes, and the CBS News crew kept its cameras rolling. The soldiers were dismissed after Simon and CBS News producer Peter Bluff brought an edited version of the report to the soldiers' superior. CBS News in Tel Aviv voluntarily turned over the videotape to Israeli officials. "We were asking for the army's reaction and saw nothing wrong with showing them an edited version of the tape," said Donald E. DeCesare, CBS News foreign editor. "But the troops' behavior, captured by powerful telescopic lenses, added dramatically to the worldwide image that Israel is grappling with since the riots in the West Bank and Gaza Strip began almost 3 months ago. On Sunday, Labor Minister," and this was a few Sundays ago actually, "Labor Minister Moshe Katsav suggested that one solution to that image problem may be to turn off the cameras. I came to the conclusion after 80 days of riots that the presence of the media causes the riots," he told a reporter from Reuters in Tel Aviv. "If the media will not be there, I don't think there will be any more riots." I'd like to know what USB listeners think about that. Give us a call, 632-6901, and tell us what opinion you have. Will the absence of media in the Middle East stop all the problems? In fact, will the absence of media everywhere stop all the problems? A lot of people seem to think so during the Grenada escapade. 632-6901, area code 516. Good evening, you're on USB.
Yes, can I just turn down my radio?
Go right ahead. 10 minutes after 11 o'clock, the program is Brain Damage, phone number 632-6901.
Hello?
Yes.
Yes, no, I don't think that it will do anything if they were to actually ban the media. Really, when you look at it, when repressive situations or repressive nations ban the media, quote-unquote, it's really to affect opinion abroad, not necessarily to do anything at home. Because obviously, just banning the media in South Africa or just banning the media in Palestine is not giving the people what they rightly deserve as far as their rights are concerned. But what that does do is that it allows the media in the United States and in other parts of the world to take over, to create their own opinions. In other words, one example is in South Africa. Now, before South Africa banned the media, you were hearing about the riots, you were hearing about the uprisings, and so on. But since South Africa has banned the media, people are saying things like, oh, well, you see, no one's fighting against the government in South Africa. They've been able to maintain peace. And that's a complete myth. You know, there have been uprisings, a lot of uprisings in South Africa, many, many uprisings since the police banned the media. But the idea is to keep people thinking that things are calmer than they actually are. And in some cases, in South Africa, it's worked with some people because they just say, oh, well, since I didn't hear anything on the news last night about Soweto, I guess no one's rioting in Soweto, or I guess everybody in Soweto is happy, you know? So this is really to affect opinion abroad, not necessarily to change the situation at home.
I haven't heard anything from South Africa in quite a while. The last bit of news that I heard out of there was that Bishop Tutu was arrested for taking part in some kind of a demonstration, but as far as the massive demonstrations, I must agree, it appears to me, and that's because of the lack of reporting, that nothing's going on.
Yes, well, that's the whole idea. You know, nothing could be farther from the truth. From the time that South Africa banned the media up until this point, they've established their armed forces in Angola. P.W. Botha has actually visited his troops in Angola. He's used Namibia as a staging ground to attack Angola. So he's using a country that is being illegally occupied to illegally occupy the territory of a second country. Thousands of people have been detained without any reason, just on the spur of a moment. Obviously, there has to be some sort of... I mean, I know people from South Africa myself, and they tell me that there is a constant impetus against the will of the state there, being as repressive as it is. As a matter of fact, from what I've been told, a lot more people are carrying guns and what have you in the townships and fighting back with guns instead of just throwing bricks and bottles at the police or the army when they come into the black areas. So things are really beginning to shift towards the people, and that's why we're seeing more repressive measures out of the government. But let's keep in mind that simply because we don't hear anything coming out that looks like people are fighting back does not mean that people are not fighting back. I mean, if Israel decides to ban the media in Palestine, let's not all say a month from now, oh boy, well, you know, I guess the Palestinians are happy now. You know, that's just what they want to create. That's the exact idea that they want to create. And what we have to do is to be able to keep in our minds that no, that this particular policy is repressive, that Israel is using tear gas that is highly poisonous, that they're in illegal, they're occupying, have been occupying this territory for the past 20 years, that the Palestinians have said over and over again that they are against the occupation, and that the only people who can represent them are the PLO. And that's what we have to understand. Likewise in South Africa, it only serves the government to say, well, gee, I guess nothing's going on. I guess business is usual. Business is never usual in South Africa. How can it be? How can it be when you can be arrested for visiting someone in a neighboring tribe? How can anything be calm? So we have to be able to be intelligent enough to weave through that sort of fascist censorship.
Well, now, obviously, you're able to get news in some way of what's happening in South Africa. And if these restrictions are imposed in Israel, people will need some kind of a way to find out what's happening there. I'd like to know, how are you able to find out what's really going on over there if the media has been cut?
Well, I get a lot of my information from Pacifica. WBAI.
Uh-huh.
And this is the only station, except for maybe WLIB, that has a really really good information network in South Africa. Plus, we have to remember something. It's not in the interest of the three networks to give you information, an enlightened view of what's happening in South Africa. I mean, as far as the networks are concerned, apartheid could go on for another 100 years, you know, because there's money to be made. And let's face it, these are people who are part of a private ownership class. They're not interested in any dramatic changes in Southern African life. So, where you'll see Pacifica reporting on a news office being raided, or some people being detained without trial or something like that, WABC will tell you that South Africa just gave birth to the first Siberian tiger in the Cape Town Zoo. You know, things like that. I remember the day that South Africa announced that it was going to take measures to ban all of the anti-apartheid organizations. That very day, I think it was Channel 2, released a story that the South African zoo had effectively made some sort of tooth transplant to a tiger. So let's be realistic. There is a certain amount of cooperation going on between the South African media and the American media. There is this little bit of cooperation there. But I get my news from WBAI, and they're really the only station that I know of that is dedicated vis-a-vis Pacifica to getting information out of South Africa. I mean, it's not enough just to say, well, what does South Africa have to give to me? In a country like that, you've got to be willing to go and look yourself. I mean, if this was the Soviet Union we were talking about, we'd have a story every day. Could you imagine if the Soviet Union had attacked, invaded Afghanistan, conquered Afghanistan, and used Afghanistan as a staging ground to attack Pakistan? It would be in the papers every day. Even if they had to make something up, there would be something there. But South Africa's been in Angola now for about 5 months, and once in a while you get a blurb about it. So you see, there is a certain amount of, you wash my back, I'll wash yours, or no news is good news, I guess it would be in this case.
No news is certainly the instance here. I'm very surprised at how much the media seems to have abided by the South African restrictions. At first, I recall seeing articles in the New York Times saying this was gotten by the censors, or this was chopped into bits by the censors, but they would say something about the fact that there was censorship over there and a lot of it. I don't see that anymore.
That's true. You don't see that anymore. And they've really changed. I remember when the South African situation first exploded on the scene in the general media, they began by calling the government the white minority government, and then they changed. It was all of a sudden the South African government, or the ruling regime. you know, sort of mellowing down the tone. And South Africa made an official request for that. They actually asked the American press, do not refer to us as the white minority government. Call us the South African government or the ruling regime or whatever you want
to
do.
But then on the other hand, if you listen to shortwave radio, which I do quite frequently, and listen to Radio Moscow, they quite openly say in their newscast the racist regime of South Africa, and that's their way of referring to it.
That doesn't surprise me. I mean, obviously, the Soviet Union has a lot less to lose economically than the United States does if South Africa becomes a progressive state. But, you know, it's just interesting for us to be able to see the way that this has sort of become a silence is golden type situation. And as far as the mainstream media is concerned in this country, this ban could go on forever, unfortunately, because they're just not pressuring the government about this. I mean, if this had happened in the Soviet Union, they would be announcing it every day. The Soviet Union has banned the press, and they would be making up stories. I mean, they would be saying that we suspect that the Soviet Union is using such and such a tear gas that is really dangerous. We suspect that the Soviet police are detaining thousands of people daily. I mean, you would hear it even if they didn't have any proof, you know? So
yeah.
One has to be able to realize that the news is not always what one receives from the government. You have to do a lot of that hunting yourself if you're a good news agency, I would think.
Let me ask you one more question. Do you think that the restrictions are going to take place in Israel?
I think so, but I don't think they're going to be as harsh as South Africa. Because you have to remember something. In South Africa can get away with a lot more because it's... large African population. I think the largest African population in the industrialized West, but it sort of tries to keep Africa, you know, away from its understanding of the world. In other words, keep Africa in the dark, so to speak. And since Americans don't really know anything about Africa, they don't know anything about the political workings of Africa, they don't know anything about the social workings of Africa and so on. Now, not everybody, obviously, but the mainstream. I mean, you're not taught anything about Africa in school. You know, it's easier for South Africa to do something like this. I mean, people will say, well, gee, isn't that a shame, but it's 10,000 miles away, and they go on about their business. Whereas with Israel, it takes on this sort of Western brother type of nature. In other words, Israel has been able to create an image of being a sister Western state. In other words, it's something that fits into the American idea of what a democracy is. You know, the settler regime, you've got people going out and taming the wilderness and turning a desert into a Garden of Eden, and you know, it fits into the American view of what a civilized society is a lot closer than Africa does, than South Africa does. So it's a lot closer to home, and it'll be harder for them to sort of push their situation away because they want to protect the reputation, you know, whereas South Africa, what do they have to protect? I mean, they've been this repressive for so long that they might as well go and ban everybody because they really have no reputation left. You know, it's a country without a reputation in the modern world. If this was the 1950s or the late 40s, yeah, you know, they would be able to do what they want and so on. But now, I mean, their reputation is shot. So they can basically, you know, what the heck?
Do you think the media has been doing a fair job over there in Israel?
In Israel, I think they've been doing a fair job. I would like to hear the PLO side of the story a little more. I mean, you still hear, the Prime Minister of Israel or a representative of the Israeli government speaking, and then maybe we'll get a professor to speak for the Palestinians once in a while. I mean, I'm talking about on a discussion panel. They'll get a professor. But you never see a representative of the PLO actually speaking for himself.
I always thought the reason for that was that the group is so fragmented that it's hard to pin down somebody that speaks for the entire group of people, either the PLO or the Palestinian people.
Well, that's a hard question. I honestly don't know the answer to that one. I would think that there must be someone. I mean, you don't have to be, an expert to really see what the Palestinians are asking for. They're asking for land for peace, basically, and, and so on. But, I mean, I don't think that would be too much of a big problem to find someone who can sort of bring the majority of ideas together into one being. I mean, there's fragmentation in the Israeli government also. Again, it just depends on whether you're looking for someone. If you're looking for someone to represent the PLO, you'll find someone. If you're not looking for someone, then you go get a professor from Hofstra University. You know what I'm saying? I mean, the news is what you go after.
Well, that is exactly true. I mean, it took me all of 10 minutes to arrange an interview with the probably the leading spokesman of the PLO in the United States.
Yeah.
So it's not difficult. That's certainly true.
Yeah, you know, the news is what you go after, and we have to understand that and not allow ourselves to be fooled by these games that they play, because when they do something like this, it's not to affect the oppressed people in that particular country. It's to affect us. It's to convince us that the situation is resolved. It's to convince us that there isn't any sort of opposition. It's to convince us that business is going on as usual. And if we don't demand that our news agencies probe deeper into a situation that we know is cockeyed, then the people who we're hoping to see free are going to suffer.
Well, the fact of the matter is the American people have a lot more power than they're led to believe they have. If the American people are outraged by something and they speak up about it, something happens.
That's true.
People listen. Now, the American people as a group are probably the most powerful in the whole world. I mean, if Syrians got upset about something, nobody would listen. No one in another country, that is.
That's true.
But Americans, they control the trade. They pass around money like you wouldn't believe. So Americans have a heck of a lot of say, and I can see your point as to why it's important to convince Americans that everything's okay in certain key areas of the world, because if they're not convinced, well, they'll put an end to it one way or the other.
That's true. And I mean, if you look at the example of if South Africa was not able to sort of shroud its foreign policy in Southern Africa so well, I mean, there's a bill passing now in Congress to stop aid from going to the rebels in Angola. I mean, that could just screw up their entire policy, their entire foreign policy in that particular country. So Americans do have a lot of political power. But it's just a matter of getting the information out. You know, I think if the news spent a little more time on stories like that where nations are being involved and people are actually suffering, instead of taking a half hour to talk about who threw whose baby out the window or who got pushed onto the train tracks. You know, basically useless information, just sensationalizing, you know, because that really, I mean, what good does that do me, you know, hearing about someone getting shoved on the train tracks or something? Someone else is just going to get shoved next week, so, you know, what's the difference? But if you would spend more time on telling me information that is going to affect some real change, then you would see more change. But again, I don't personally think that's what the media is looking for.
There are different ways of looking at news. I could see how it's important to know that there's somebody going around pushing people into subway trains. I know, based on what I've seen on news reports, I know the safe places to stand on the platforms and what not to do, because, you know, if you do this, it's possible that this could happen. I've seen all the possibilities come to fruition. Obviously, it's not as important as entire peoples being dispersed into nothingness, but I think there's different levels. There's different levels of, of news. We shouldn't really neglect any of them, some more than others.
No, but you can basically get the drift of the society without all the sensationalizing. I mean, I don't have to hear about who knocked who over the head every day of the week to know that there's a lot of crime in New York. I mean, I know that. You don't have to tell me about all the little individual incidents here and there and all over the place to, you know, convey that idea to me.
True, and it's not necessary to know every aspect of every trial that goes through. It gets kind of boring after
That's
a while.
That's true, too.
But such information should be available should somebody want to watch that kind of thing, but it shouldn't be crammed down our throats.
Yes,
that's
the
my
thing
point.
Of it is, you don't really get that much of a choice, especially in a society that tells you you must watch TV.
Uh-huh.
You know, this is a society that offers you three networks that basically do the same thing.
You know what? What I wish is that Pacifica had a TV network.
Oh yeah,
that would
I
be
mean,
incredible.
Could you imagine the controversy?
Well, the closest thing we have to it now is PBS.
But they're a little, you know, I don't like all their sources. You know, like depend on. Well, I mean, there's nothing wrong with it, but I just think they should be a little more independent. You know, like they'll take BBC newsreels and stuff like that.
Well, what is the reason for that? They don't have any money. Why don't they have any money? Because the government doesn't, like in any other country in the world, the government does not supply them with money to operate. They have to ask people for money. They have to ask corporations for money.
Yeah.
It's heartbreaking.
That's
but the thing is,
yeah.
At least you get different views. You won't get just one view. You'll get the BBC one day. You'll get Indian news the next day.
That's right, yeah.
And the McNeil-Lehr report that they have on every night is fairly intelligent as far as the way they approach things.
It is. I mean, I'm not trying to knock PBS by any means. I mean, it's PBS is the salt of television in this country. But I'm just saying that we just have to pay attention to what we're listening to and what we're seeing on the news. It's not something that we should just sit and passively absorb. Because if you watch news in New York, you get the impression that they expect you just to sit back and just believe everything they tell you.
True.
In other words, you know, they do it with a certain amount of flair and a certain amount of performing and everything. But
that's entertainment. It's entertainment to them, and we should think news is entertainment. I mean, some people may feel that way. They can watch People magazine or whatever that program is, Entertainment Tonight, that's on all the time whenever you turn on the TV set, but there should also be something for people that just want to see straightforward what's going on. It exists everywhere else in the world.
Right.
Sometimes
yes.
it's propaganda, but sometimes it's not.
That's why it's important to try to get news away from the rating system, because the rating system makes it a competition for viewers, not a competition for quality news.
The rating system is almost as bad as having a huge corporation deciding what goes on and what doesn't.
Right, exactly.
In fact, it's almost the same thing.
Yeah, you know, it's just, it takes away from the accuracy a bit, you know. It just makes it more difficult to sift through what is actually happening and what is actually the opinion of whoever's producing it. Now, I'll tell you something. Have you noticed a dramatic change between the news before Murdoch took over Channel 5 and after Murdoch took over?
Well, I didn't like it very much before Murdoch, and I don't think I really watched it after Murdoch. The only difference I might have noticed was that it seemed a bit glossier. I don't really watch Channel 5 all that much.
Well, I watched Channel 5 a lot before Murdoch took over, and I've watched it somewhat after he took over, and I can see a lot of changes. I mean, he really sort of yanked that station to the right.
Uh-huh.
Unbelievably well, so. I mean, he's got the Tarzan Film Festival on every Sunday.
Okay, but what's wrong with that? What's wrong with having a station that's to the right as long as you have a balance, as long as you have something else?
Nothing, I mean, well, nothing is wrong with having a station to the right, but I'm just saying I can detect the impressions of the producer or the owner. And I'm just making a point that you can tell that the owner's view is going into the production of the programming on that particular station. I mean, if a person wants to watch that, you know, fair enough, watch what you want. But I'm just making an observation.
You saw the same thing with the New York Post. That paper moved to the right when he took that over as well.
Yeah, you know,
usually
I'm not saying,
it's not unusual to see something like that. I'm saying it's just as long as it's balanced, as long as you can get all different angles and reach a conclusion yourself.
That's true.
In a democratic society, that should work. I'd like to thank you for calling. What town are you calling from?
I'm calling from Quorum.
Quorum, great. You mentioned Pacifica News before. I believe you can also hear that on WPKN.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's on 89.5, and I believe they have an evening newscast every night at 6.
Thank you.
It's also being rumored that we might subscribe to Pacifica again, which would be certainly nice.
Yes, it would. They're a really excellent news agency.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, let's hope more stations around the country pick it up, because it really is the only alternative. Even National Public Radio has gotten kind of show busy lately.
Yeah, yeah. All right, thank you.
Okay, thanks for calling. 632-6901. Good evening, you're on Brain Damage.
What's up?
Hi.
This is Eric?
Yeah. Not much. What's up with you?
Just waiting for power surge to come on. I just got in, so I figured I'd call up because I was listening last week when you were in the city.
Uh-huh. Well, that was 2 weeks ago. Do you have anything to say regarding what we're talking about?
What's the issue tonight?
Well, we're talking about the Middle East, the press in the United States, South Africa, all the controversial things you can possibly think of we're talking about tonight.
You talking about, the suicide rate, heavy metal, and all that shit?
Not really, no. 632-6901, area code 516. And let's continue with the story that we have as far as restrictions on riot coverage in Israel. The Israeli cabinet has debated for more than an hour fairly recently on whether to impose press restrictions. It's better the media be distressed than me be in distress, one Knesset member said in a report aired on the CBS Evening News. Stopping short of severe restrictions, CBS News reported that Israeli troops have been told by Defense Minister Yitzhak Rabin to begin utilizing limited bans on American reporters based on the troops' discretion. Restrictions on the press would repeat a pattern set by the South African government. South Africa imposed severe restrictions on reporters covering riots in the black townships against a minority white government. Limitations were imposed after network camera crews broadcast from South Africa videotapes of soldiers shooting at rioting crowds. Funerals and demonstrations also are off limits. While the anger and frustration expressed by the Israeli officials are leveled against media in general, they are aimed directly at the American television networks. Pictures sent via satellite to America are of Israeli soldiers opening fire on Palestinian men, women, and children who are throwing stones. The same images are seen on Israeli television. The Israeli National Television Network receives CBS News footage through Newsnet, a syndication arm of CBS News. It concerns me that they are even considering restricting our movements, said Jerry Lamprecht, director of news coverage at NBC News. Bob Murphy, vice president of news coverage at ABC News, declined to discuss the situation in the Middle East. It's a political dilemma, he said, and I don't want to add fuel to the fire. What confounds the network news divisions is that Israel, which previously had employed press censorship, has not done so with the Palestinian riots, at least not yet. They've drawn an interesting line, said CBS's This Is Our. Israel tends to only use censorship on stories they feel are of strategic military importance. They don't consider this a matter of strategic military importance yet. And that story came from Newsday on Thursday, March 3rd, 1988. Brings up some very interesting points. One of the points touched upon in the later part of that article concerns Israeli television picking up CBS News. And I realize something parallel to that in this country would be such an advantage. How come we're not able to turn on the TV set and see what BBC News said today, or what Israeli television said today, or what the Soviets said? It seems every other country in the world is able to do that, is able to see us talking about what's going on. Why can't we see what they're saying? Why are we so uninterested in what they're saying? Why don't we know any other languages? Why don't we know anything about history? It's really, the American people aren't stupid. We're very intelligent people. Why don't we know these things? We're not being taught. Why aren't we being taught? It's really curious. Because an informed public is a very, very useful thing to have. An uninformed public is a very dangerous thing. It's 11:39 on a Saturday night. This is Brain Damage. In case you can't tell, we're on until midnight. I'm Eric Corley, here every week at this time. Almost every week. Sometimes I'm busy doing something else and somebody else comes in. But that's the nature of life. There was one other article I wanted to take a look at. As soon as I can find it, I will do that. Let's get out the phone number one more time. 632-6901. Area code 516. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Eric.
Yes.
You were talking before about an uninformed public.
Excuse me?
You were talking before about an uninformed public.
That's right.
Yeah, there's a lot of truth in what you're saying.
Uh-huh.
Like the American people, like in the, I myself, I'm still in high school, but there's like a lot of kids who just have the attitude that, you know, that don't care attitude.
Uh-huh. Well, they care more about the things in their...
Kind of like the me, you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, it's the me generation still, but they care more about their own personal lives, their skin complexion, their cars, their girlfriends, that kind of thing, which is fine, but...
You got to take a little bit of interest in the outside world. I mean, you got to stop and look around and see what's going on.
True, because the outside world is there. It's part of us. It's not outside. It's all around. That's the point I've been trying to make, that the outside world doesn't have a specific boundary. It affects all of us.
Another thing I don't understand is why is the United States still giving aid to all these countries like Ethiopia? Why don't they give the aid to the people in the United States who are poor?
There are plenty of poor people in the United States. I think...
You care more about the people in other countries than the people in our own country, and we're doing more to help the other people's situation than our own.
Well, now, it's because, at least I feel it's because we like to think that there is no problem in this country. And if we simply ignore it and don't pay attention to it, it will go away. That's the attitude I see. It's we drew a parallel a couple of weeks ago when we were in New York City. The homeless people there.
People like lying around Penn Station.
People who, exactly, those are the people we talk to.
Bathroom.
They do not understand why people can just walk right by them and not even acknowledge their presence, not even say, sorry, I don't have money to give you.
No, it's kind of like cover. People really don't want to believe that. There's like, it's kind of like with World War II. Like, people didn't want to believe all the destruction that like the Holocaust had caused. People really just want to look around and see the situation.
Uh-huh. That's true. And by not acknowledging it, somehow we feel better. Somehow we feel as if it's not really happening. And that's what I see in a larger sense.
Like an ignorance of paradise.
Yeah, that's quite a good parallel. What town are you calling from, sir?
Comac.
Comac. A lot of calls from Comac tonight.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thanks very much for calling us.
All right, keep on going with Brain Damage. It's, really makes lots of people thinking.
Okay, right. Thank you.
Have a good night.
You too. Brain Damage is the show, and hopefully we'll get through to some people, or they'll get through to us. If you want to get through to us, 632-6901 is our phone number. Good evening, you're on Brain Damage. Hello? Well, there's nobody there. Oh, there's a dial tone there. That's one thing to be thankful for. 11:42, and I found the article that I was looking for. This is the one from the Times of a week ago, March 5th, 1988, New York Times, that is, concerning Henry Kissinger, which we touched upon when we were speaking to the spokesperson from the Palestine Liberation Organization earlier. Henry Kissinger has privately urged that Israel bar television cameras and reporters from the occupied territories as part of its effort to put down violent protests. Israel should accept the criticism of the press for doing so, according to Mr. Kissinger, and should suppress the Palestinian uprisings as quickly as possible with whatever force is necessary to bring an end to a tragic situation. He gave these views last month at an off-the-record breakfast in which he also urged prominent American Jews to refrain from criticizing Israel for its handling of the crisis. In addition, he expressed reservations about a peace conference and proposed that Israel unilaterally announce that it would give up some territory it seized in the 1967 Arab-Israeli War. The remarks by Mr. Kissinger, who was Secretary of State in the administrations of Richard M. Nixon and Gerald Ford, were outlined in a confidential memorandum by Julius Berman, a former chairman of the Conference of Presidents of Major American Jewish Organizations. Asked about the memo, Mr. Kissinger and Mr. Berman expressed outrage yesterday, this was actually a week ago Friday, that the remarks in the memo had been made public. Now, why should they be upset that it was made public? Why say things? If you're Henry Kissinger, you shouldn't say things even in the bathroom when you're by yourself that you don't expect other people to hear. That's just my own personal feelings on that. Let's get back to the article. Mr. Kissinger did not disavow the remarks, but insisted that his proposals for excluding news organizations were only a small part of what he had said. In summarizing Mr. Kissinger's points, the memo said Israel should bar the media from entry into the territories involved in the present demonstrations, accept the short-term criticism of the world press for such conduct, and put down the insurrection as quickly as possible, overwhelmingly, brutally, and rapidly. He really said that. Incredible. Paraphrasing Mr. Kissinger, the memo said the insurrection must be quelled immediately, and the first step should be to throw out television, a la South Africa. To be sure, there will be international criticism of the step, but it will dissipate in short order. It dissipated with South Africa, as we have just been talking about for the past 20 minutes or so. They imposed censorship there, and what's going on in South Africa? Not much. There's really nothing happening. Everything's happy over there. No huge riots, no huge demonstrations, people getting shot in the street. Don't hear about it anymore, so it must not be happening. As Kissinger put it, there are no awards for losing with moderation. Mr. Berman's memo also said Mr. Kissinger appropriately noted that Israel's public relations were horrible in handling the crisis. Mr. Berman said the memo had been intended only for friends. When's the last time you sent a memo to your friends? Mr. Kissinger also expressed dismay at the disclosure. It's enough to drive you to drink, he said. It's sort of disgusting to me. But he wasn't talking about what he said. He was talking about people finding out what he said. It's 11:46. You're tuned to WUSB in Stony Brook. The program is Brain Damage. We're here for about another 10 minutes or so. If you have any calls to make, any comments to make, that is, give us a call, 632-6901, area code 516. If we have any calls, we'll get to them right after this.
Every track it hangs out over every track you dream. That's just
That is The Clash on WUSB, Brain Damage, and Death or Glory, among other things. It's 10 minutes to 12 o'clock, and no calls? There's no calls. I don't believe it. My goodness. What's wrong with Long Island? We've been talking for 2 hours about waking up, about people learning and speaking and saying things and discussing the issues around them and the issues of the world, and no one has called us? Oh, I'm embarrassed. I'm ashamed. And I'm not being effective either by laying this guilt trip on people. 632-6901. In all fairness, you may not have known the phone number, even though I've said it 50 million times. 632-6901. Area code 516. We only have a couple of minutes left. So if you want to call up and say, if you think I've been spouting nonsense over the last couple of hours, or if there's any element of truth to the matter, please give a call and tell us. No one's calling. This is incredible. This is really incredible. I've never seen such an organized spirit before. This is something to behold. An organized spirit of people being inactive. People think being inactive is easy. It's not. It takes great organization. And unity. Yes, unity. That's what we have here. Unity and apathy. The UIA movement, you could call it. 632-6901. I'm only going to say the number one more time, and it's going to be now. 632-6901, area code 516. Let's glance over the news as we have it at the moment. More than 21 children are still stranded on two Nebraska farms after their school buses got stuck in a blizzard Thursday. The bus drivers have been taking care of the children at the remote farmhouses. Electricity has been restored at one farm where the children had huddled under blankets for two nights and cooked their meals on a camp stove. I know if they were listening, they'd be calling. Second grader Leif Anderson says the kids aren't scared and adds, "We're all cuddled up on the couch." The Midwestern blizzard has been accompanied by winds of up to 50 miles an hour. This is the blizzard of 88 they're getting. It got so bad yesterday in Minnesota that snow plows were pulled off the roads. Only Volkswagens were allowed on the roads. Snow plows, no way. In Chadron, Nebraska, 31 inches of snow has fallen. Winter storm warnings are issued for several states again today. USB is not one of them. And someone has picked up the phone. The phone was ringing, and someone in the station picked it up and hung up. I'm sorry for the ineptitude of the people around here, but it does happen occasionally. If you wanted to get on the air and you were just hung up on, call us again, 632-6901. If you're in the station within the sound of my voice, keep your hands off the phones. Thank you. The South Carolina caucus took place today. Native son Jesse Jackson believes he'll win the state. I don't think we have any update on that, although we might. Sometimes our Associated Press ticker is a bit slow on things like that, but he says he believes he'll win the state. He may very well have won it already. Ride the victory to a strong showing in Tuesday's Illinois primary as well. Jackson predicts that that will give him the overall delegate lead over current Democratic frontrunner Michael Dukakis. As we mentioned before, Secretary of State George Shultz is calling Congress's decision to close the United Nations Office of the Palestine Liberation Organization, in his words, one of the dumber things that Congress has done lately. Attorney General Edwin Meese is giving the PLO until March 21st to close its New York office, or he'll ask a federal court to enforce the Anti-Terrorism Act of 1987. Shultz says the unintended effect of the decision has been to give legitimacy to the PLO. National Guardsmen and state troopers are joining the fight to battle wildfires that have torched western Texas. A Texas Forest Service official says more than 265,000 acres have been burned in the fires. Livestock has been killed, but no injuries to people are reported. Congressional analysts challenge President Reagan's contention that a capital gains tax cut for Americans would boost revenues and reduce the federal deficit. The Congressional Budget Office concludes that a lower rate could have the opposite effect, and there's no way to predict what taxpayers would do. Looks like we have a call. Let's see if we do. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Hi. Did you need a...
Excuse me?
Oh, there we go. was wondering if you still leading callers. I felt bad for you.
Well, I appreciate you feeling bad for us. We always like to get callers, you know, and we ask for callers. Sometimes we can't understand why we don't get them, but thanks for calling.
Sometimes the reason you can't get them is because I'm driving in my car.
Uh-huh. Well, I hope you didn't screech to a halt and then run to a payphone on our account.
So I kind of screeched into my garage and slammed the door shut and up into my room and called you up.
Okay, well, have you been listening to us tonight?
Not the whole show. I got kind of the gist of it. I think it's a great idea.
Uh-huh.
I'm not sure if you're discussing a specific topic or not.
Well, we were discussing events in Israel, events in South Africa. We were speaking to the representative from the Palestine Liberation Organization who was being... asked to close down the office. We spoke to the chief observer at the United Nations.
We spoke to you on the radio.
Yeah, we spoke to him for about an hour, actually. And,
I'm really sorry I missed that.
Well, we do have copies on tape, but I can't say I'm going to make lots of copies for people. I do have to make a copy for him.
Right.
But it's the kind of thing we do here, you know, and we've been talking about how Americans, as a rule, just either by their own choice don't care or... are kind of kept from caring by not being informed on what's happening in the rest of the world.
Well,
and you know, this always happens. This always happens. It's 3 minutes to 12 o'clock, and suddenly I'm getting a lot of calls here.
I got another call.
I've got a bunch of calls now. It's incredible. But since you were nice enough to screech into your garage, why don't you give us your opinions on the matter?
All right. Well, why don't you ask me a question? I'll give you an opinion.
Well, do you think that that we're being given the full picture of what's going on in the rest of the world through our media? Do you think the media is doing a fair job?
Isn't that a kind of a broad question? You want to narrow it down? The rest of the world, of course we don't know what's going on in the rest of the world. We don't know what's going on in Nepal.
Well, we're talking specifically about South Africa and Israel.
We definitely don't know what's going on in South Africa.
Because of censorship by the government over there, proposed censorship in Israel.
Well, I don't know about Israel, but South Africa is definitely on its way to hell.
Uh-huh.
There's so much going wrong there. The place is just going to disintegrate and sink into the ocean or something.
Uh-huh.
It's horrible what's going on down there, and I really can't offer any solutions, but we obviously don't know what's going on down there in any detail at all.
Uh-huh. Well, we were kind of surprised that the media seems to be cooperating so much, so easily, that we don't get, except through sources like Pacifica, we don't get the true story, or at least what we perceive to be the true story, just any story other than what the South African government seems to want us to hear.
Well, as far as their government is concerned, from their point of view, they're doing a phenomenal job, because most people that I'm speaking to, it's not the first thing out of their mouths in discussion. No one really is, well, I'm not going to say no one, but there are very few people who are actively concerned with what's going on now. I mean, the number who were when the news was reporting, it was dramatically higher than it is now. I mean, the amount of attention being paid to the country has dropped off significantly since this censorship went into effect. So from the government's point of view, what they're doing is very effective as far as the outside world is concerned. Not making it any less horrible, but it is effective.
Oh, true. I don't think any of us would disagree that censorship is not effective. That's
right.
That's the whole point of it, you know, to be effective.
Israel is concerned if it... not saying that this would be right, but as far as getting what they need to get done, which is stop this uprising garbage and get on with having a country, that would also probably be effective in a matter of time. The only problem with Israel is that it's an ally of the United States of America, and it's also historically a rather open society.
Uh-huh. And that's where I think the hope comes in, is the fact that there are people speaking out over there. And the integrity of the society, I think, is what will save it.
The people running the show over there are not too bright. The Prime Minister now is at Paris now?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a little bit of a maniac, I think.
Yeah, well, they call the three over there the Three Stooges. I've heard that said a few times by Israelis, and it's kind of interesting. I wish we had more time to talk about this, but we are at the end of the show. I want to thank you for calling.
Sure, I'm going to be listening now. I didn't even know you were on. Is this new?
Every Saturday night from 10 to 12.
All right, I'll be there.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Sure.
The program is Brain Damage, and it's over. The program is now over because we've run out of time. But we're back again next week, and every week at this time, well, every week at this time we'll be saying goodnight, but every week at 10 o'clock we'll be saying hello and talking for 2 hours. With all kinds of fun, interesting, controversial, sad, happy things. And, of course, you, our listeners, are cordially and sometimes not cordially invited to participate and talk with us and with our guests when they come into the studio. I'm Eric Corley, thanking you once again for making this so much fun for all of us and informative and all that kind of thing. Stay tuned for the brothers. They're coming up with some hours of lobotomy for you. Stay tuned to 90.1 FM WUSB in Stony Brook, Radio Free Long Island, for the best in all kinds of things. Diversity, it's the name of the game. Keep it up. See you next week.
The lunatic is on the grass. Remembering games, days of chains and laughs. Got to keep the lunatic on the path. The lunatic is in the hall. The lunatics are in my hall. The paper holds their folded faces to the floor. And every day the paper boy brings more.
And Secret Service will be at Siberia. Chieftains will be playing at Avery Fisher Hall. Gato Barbieri will be at SOB's. Hal Roach and John McNally will be at the Westbury Music Fair. Johnny Copeland will be at the Lone Star. And Gerald Albright will be at the Bottom Line. Thursday, March 17th, Day for Night will be at Spark. John Brennan and Blue Rodeo will be at the Bottom Line. Walt Michael and his company in Stoutheart will be at the Lone Star. St. Patty's Day celebration with the Wolf Tones at the Ritz. Friday, March 18th, Day for Night will be at February's. Fetch and Bones and Mambo X will be playing at Drums. Flamin' Lips and Bee Tavern will be at Maslow. Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons and the Four Tops will be at the Westbury Music Fair. Godfathers, Slim and Wachusis, and the Mills will be playing at the Ritz. In Excess and Public Image Limited will be at Radio City Music Hall through March 20th. The Kimsey Report will be playing at Tramp. Men Without Hats will be at Bay Street. McCoy Tyner will be at Nichols. New Riders of the Purple Sage and Surreal McCoys will be at the Lone Star. Nighthawks and Treat Her Right will be at the Bottom Line. Philip Glass performing Kenneth Scotty will be at the Beacon Theater. Underdog, Super Touch, Abomination, and In Your Face will be at Sundance. Saturday, March 19th, Avatar will be at Showcase. Bruce Coburn will be at the Town Hall. The Fuzz will be at the Bottom Line. Jerry Harrison will be at Bay Street. The Kinsey Report will be at Tramps. McCoy Tyner will be playing at Nichols. New Riders of the Purple Sage and C.L. McCoy's will be at the Lone Star. Philip Glass performing Kenneth Scotty will be at the Beacon Theater. Precious Time performing a tribute to the psychedelic 60s will be playing at Bourbon Street. Sabotage, Burning Star, and Empire will be at Sundance. Simon Wilchusen from Pianosaurus will be playing at Maxwell's. Tom Paxton will be at IMAC of Huntington, and the Wooden Tops will be playing at the Ritz. This has been the Concert Billboard for Sunday, March 13th. You can hear the billboard on WUSB 90.1 weekdays at 3 and 9 a.m. and at 4:30 and 10 p.m. and on weekends at noon and midnight. If you have any questions, please call us here at the station at 632-6901.
John Lydon of Public Image Limited, and you are listening to WUSB Stony Brook.